Hello, I'm Caleb Howard, and this is Tales from Sacred Texts. The world is built on stories. From the beginning of time, humans have immersed themselves in legends and myth. When God himself wanted to explain to us what he was like, he didn't push elaborate treatises, but instead told stories about humanity. In this podcast, I tackle the concept of religion through stories and legends. Told through a 21st century lens, I explain to religious and non-religious people alike the stories that lie at the very heart of the belief that maybe there is a God, and maybe he really is good. Today is the final episode of Season 3. We're finishing the two-part season finale on the story of David and Bathsheba. The story focuses on what happens when the heroes we look up to fall. If you're just tuning into the podcast now, please go back to the previous episode and get the first part of the story before starting this one. We're picking up right where we left off in the middle of the story, so hearing the previous episode is absolutely essential. You may also want to listen to episodes 310 to 312, which gives some backstory on David, but that's not required. Last time, we saw how David sexually assaulted Bathsheba, murdered her husband, and took her as his own wife, gloating that he'd gotten away with it all. Far from the hero we knew and loved, David has become evil and cares nothing for God. But God has seen everything David has done, and God is displeased. Today, we'll finish the story of David and Bathsheba with God's reaction and preview the fallout from David's actions. Our story resumes around 8 or 9 months from where we left off. David's attitude is unchanged. He still feels smug about how he got away with everything, though, unbeknownst to him, rumors are being whispered around the kingdom. He feels no guilt about what he did, only satisfaction. Bathsheba is lonely, sad, and confused, but she doesn't let on. She escaped with her own life. In ancient times, that's counted as a win. Bathsheba delivered the baby, but from the beginning, the child seemed sickly. There was something wrong, but no one could put their finger on it. David paced around the palace, nervously. He was still pacing when his servants called to him. There was someone here to see him. It was Nathan, a tall prophet who had come by a few times before, always with good news. Nathan trudged into the throne room, wearing animal skins and leaning on his staff. The prophets were always interesting characters, dressing super weird and acting even weirder. But what they said came to pass, so they definitely got an exception to the dress code. Nathan walked up to David, who was planning to ask him for advice on the child. But David didn't even get a chance to open his mouth. Nathan observed none of the ritual pleasantries and immediately launched into a weird story. He needed advice, and probably some legal action from the king, honestly. So he'd been in this town where a rich guy lived. Total jerk, villain of this story. Anyway, he'd seen this rich guy, and he had a whole lot of stuff. Pretty much everything he could ever want. 1,000 sheep, several thousand cattle, rich robes, finery, everything. From what he'd seen, this guy had it all. Next door, the rich man's neighbor lived. A very poor man, with one little sheep that he'd brought up from the time she'd been born. She was his pet. He nursed her from a bottle, fed her from his own plate, and held her at night as she slept. The neighbor would have done anything for his little sheep. But one night, the rich dude got hungry. He had 1,000 sheep, but he didn't want to waste one on dinner. So he crept to his neighbor's house while the man was at the market, took the lamb, slaughtered it, had his servants prepare it, and he feasted on his neighbor's precious pet. David shrieked in anger. Who was this person? Tell him and he'd have the man executed. And from his estate, he would give 4 little lambs to the neighbor. Nathan looked at David, unflinching. David was the man. Thank you. courtroom gasped. David's mouth hung open. Nathan continued. David was the rich man. He had access to everything he wanted. He had all the companionship he wanted from his many wives. But to him, women were just property. Meanwhile, his neighbor, Bathsheba, had had nothing. She was a foreigner who had just moved to town, and all she had was her husband, whom she loved more than anything. Unlike David, who viewed his wives as property, she treasured her husband. But when David wanted pleasure, he went to her house, sexually assaulted her, and slaughtered her husband without pity. Nathan told the king the message that God had sent him with. David had been a shepherd boy. God had given him everything. A home, a family, a throne. Was that not enough for David? God would have given him more had he asked. But instead, David stole another man's wife. God knew David's mind, and he knew that the king had been rationalizing his behavior by saying that Uriah had died in battle. But God viewed the death of Uriah as if David had done it himself. God continued, David would be punished. Calamity would come on David, judgment, and soon. David had tried to keep his terrible actions under wraps, but everything would come to light. David had passed his own sentence. He would die. It all hit the king at once, and he broke down crying. He rubbed at his own skin in disgust, as if to get the filth off of his body. His own filth. When he looked into the mirror, he saw a monster. What had he done? David spent days pacing the palace, crying, weeping, thinking about how he could undo his wrong. He went to Bathsheba and begged in tears for some modicum of forgiveness. He knew that he could never, in a million years, make up for what he did to her, but for the very little it was worth, he would regret it until his dying day. Nathan came back the next week and told King David that he wouldn't die. God had forgiven him. But David would still suffer the consequences of what he had done. David had said that the rich man should repay four lambs for one. The king would have to repay four lives for Uriah's. Four of his son's lives. David sobbed. Was God going to punish his sons for his own sins? That wasn't like God's character. God should punish him instead. Nathan the prophet slowly shook his head. God wasn't going to do anything. He just wasn't going to intervene to stop the chain of events that David had set in motion. The son in Bathsheba's womb? The trauma from having her husband murdered during the pregnancy had taken its toll on the baby. It wouldn't have ever been able to survive. His other sons? They weren't stupid. They knew exactly what David had done, and it had already been indelibly impressed on several that murder, treason, and rape were okay as long as you got what you wanted. The king could try to change them, but three of his sons had already made their choice about how they would live. All three of them would die doing horrible things to other people. Tears filled David's eyes again. He wished that he could take everything back. Nathan nodded. He knew. Sadly, that wasn't how the world worked. God would forgive, but God couldn't magic David out of life's consequences. Nor did he want to. King David walked back up to the roof of the palace where it had all begun, nearly vomiting at the memory. He was sorry. So sorry. He knelt and prayed to God, begging for help to become the kind of person he could live with again. And though he didn't hear anything audible, he felt like he heard the voice of God. One day. David wouldn't feel filthy forever. He'd always have some regret, but his terrible sin wouldn't overwhelm the rest of his life. God knew David could change, could go back to the kind, merciful man he'd once been. God still believed in him. David began to sing. Create a pure heart within me, God, he continued. God didn't want burnt sacrifices or incense. Instead, the only sacrifice that God would look favorably on was a repentant heart, and that's what David was bringing God tonight. The sun set, but David remained on the roof for a long time. David wept for what he'd done, but the others in the palace were remembering what Nathan the prophet had said about calamity. As the sun went down on the palace, many tossed and turned until late at night, the gnawing feeling in their stomachs that dark days were ahead. That's all for this week. Clouds of suffering are gathering above Israel, and they are about to break. At some point, we'll do a series on how the prophesied trouble arrives, but that won't be next time. We'll leave David up on that roof for a little while longer. For a long while, actually, because we're wrapping up season 3 today. I'll have a trailer out soon, and when we come back with season 4, we'll be spending a lot of time in the New Testament with Jesus, the person who changed everything. Fully God and fully human, Jesus revolutionized the world as we know it. Not just because God himself walked this earth, but because Jesus showed us a new way to live and then died to make it possible for us to live that way. With his death, Jesus started a movement known as the Way, a movement that eventually grew into what we know today as Christianity. We'll do a quick sponsor break and then get into a relatively long breakdown of the past two episodes. We'll begin our discussion of the David story with a look at consequences. Forgiveness and escaping consequences are two different things. God graciously gives forgiveness to all, but he never grants immunity to consequences. Because though God is a God of mercy, he's also a God of justice. Letting people off the hook and magicking them out of bad situations they put themselves into would just, as Nathan the prophet tells David, embolden people to become more reckless in corruption and evil. Many times Christians, particularly leaders in power, do reprehensible things and then think that once we catch them, we should cover up what they've done and give them a blank slate. That's unbiblical. Yeah, David stayed in power, but God exposed what he had done to the entire kingdom. King David lost respect, influence, and approval for the rest of his life. Sometimes people use the story of Uriah to illustrate the harm that we as Christians can do by abandoning a person who is struggling and letting him fight his battles alone. And that's true. But these people tend to make the wrong analogy, comparing the pastor of a church who is caught cheating on his wife to Uriah. Don't abandon those who are struggling quickly is turned into an order to shield the people in power from the consequences of their own actions. But Paul instructs us to expel the wrongdoers from our number. We should hope for their repentance and salvation, but we should not allow them to besmirch the name of God's people. Those who violate God's law and flaunt it should be exposed. Far from defending those in power, this story calls us to fight for those who suffer as a direct result of the abuses of those in power. Uriah didn't die because David ordered Joab to leave him. Uriah didn't die because Joab called the retreat. Uriah died because his fellow soldiers ran from him when a person in power told them to. And yes, I will acknowledge that ancient Hebrew soldiers aren't completely guilty. They weren't aware of David's plan. They had to make a split-second decision in the middle of battle. But we, as Christians, are aware of the devil's plan. Division, exploitation, and victimization have been in his playbook from the beginning. Satan's principles have corrupted many in power. Those powerful people in turn dictate Satan's will, victimizing people and then demanding we retreat. When we abandon those who have been victimized, we leave them to die just like the ancient Hebrews abandoned Uriah, their brother, on the field of battle because they were told to. It's far too easy to let enough of the world get into our worldview that we find ourselves abandoning somebody. Perhaps we buy into an ideology that tells us to overlook victims. Some political commentator that we like tells us that racial struggles don't exist, and so we turn a deaf ear to the people who are pleading with us for help, because the person we've placed in a position of power in our lives has told us to retreat. Perhaps the influential person who we listen to has told us that a particular class of people is evil and irredeemable. Do we even think about what the Bible says? God tells us that he's had enough of our worship until we stop trampling on God's requirements and start advocating for his children, our brothers and sisters. We can't leave our fellow Christians alone because the battle gets uncomfortable. Far from it. We are called to stand and fight. God forbid that we leave even one of his children. God forbid that we cover up the stories of victims to protect those in power. God forbid that we listen to the directives of those in power and withhold our help from those who need it the most. God forbid. We'll wrap up by talking about the fall of David, the hero. David's fall was meteoric, and it shook the entire kingdom of Israel, leaving violence, suffering, and death in its wake. David's story is the cautionary tale against looking up to any human as an example. Even one of the best people, when presented with power and fame, surrendered to its hypnotic influence. Heroes are dangerous things. They're inspiring, motivating, and instill literal power in the veins of those who believe in them. Sometimes, all the weak need is for someone to believe in to make them strong. The world today is facing a crisis of hope, and heroes are beacons to cling to. But heroes are human. Sometimes, heroes make mistakes, or worse, become intoxicated with power and become corrupt. Then they fall like a gigantic tree, tearing through everything in their way and striking the earth with enough power to shake others from their feet. Heroes often begin to fall imperceptibly. They yield to temptation within, but for years still seem strong without. Little by little, rot creeps through their souls, and in following their example, we unknowingly introduce the same rot into ourselves. In the end, we all end up hollow and empty. When a hero falls, some people follow their hero into corruption. They race toward the abyss, ready to fall the same way their hero did. They can never break the shackles of hero worship. If it was okay for their hero, it's okay for them. They end up twisting their thoughts, rationalizing things they never would have thought were okay, to keep their hero on his pedestal. Others mourn for the idyllic feeling they once had. They become cold and cynical. If even their hero could not stand, what hope do they have? They surrender to hopelessness. But others accept their hero's fall and change their worldview. They grow up and see the world for what it is. No longer do they look up to someone for their salvation. Instead, they find that salvation within God. We can never truly rely on another human as an example of right doing. Everyone makes mistakes, everyone falls, and many become corrupt. Instead, we need to look to the one hero that never falls, Jesus. It sounds really corny, but Jesus will never let us down. Humans might, but Jesus' example will persist throughout time and anchor through the vicissitudes of life. But we're human, and it's inevitable that we'll cling to heroes. We're human, and that's what humans do. And that's okay. The Bible publishes the stories exposing the weaknesses of its main characters to help us understand the limitations of human heroes so that we aren't so shocked and hurt when our own heroes fall. But it also publishes the stories to inspire our souls with determination. Not me. Not today. There's someone looking to you as a hero today. Your children, your friends, someone you met once but made an impression on through the way you acted. There are people who look at you and they see hope. If you can't hold out against evil for yourself, hold out for them. With every bit of your God-given strength, hold out for them. that's where this season ends. As I said earlier, we'll be dropping a trailer for season 4 soon. Until then, fight against evil, hold out against temptation, advocate for victims, plead for justice. Don't leave anyone to go it alone. And above all, study the life of Jesus. He is our hero, he is our hope, and he is our strength. Let me leave y'all with one parting verse, Romans 10:11. Anyone who believes in him will never be put to shame. Thank you so much for listening to season 3 of this podcast. From the story of Jehu to the story of David's fall, this show has grown so much. I feel like in the last few episodes, I've finally found my voice. Let's try to double the show's audience when season 4 comes out. The best way you can do that is to tell all your friends about my podcast and leave a 5-star review. I appreciate your loyalty so much. Credits to myself, Caleb Howard, for script writing, storytelling, and opening theme music. Credits to Evoke Music for the closing theme. Credits to Evoke Music, Pixabay, YouTube, and Breaking Copyright for the background music. Credits to myself, Caleb Howard, for script writing, storytelling, and opening theme music. Credits to Evoke Music for the closing theme. Credits to Evoke Music, Pixabay, YouTube, and Breaking Copyright for the background music. Have a wonderful weekend, and see you next season.